Welcome, one and all, to this May 2018 support group gathering that is sponsored by, you guessed it, Parkinson's Recovery. Thanks so much for joining us today. Our program today will consist of, as is our custom, reviewing some of the exciting research developments that we have unearthed over the past month. I have one submission of a question that I want to read and respond to, and then, of course, I will be connecting into each of you who have called in. If you have a specific topic or question or follow-up issue about anything that anyone has discussed, including me, remember that you can type that in the chat room or enter that in the chat room if you don't want to actually connect in by phone. You can also enter anything into that questions and answers field on the left side of your support group gathering page. So first of all, let me encourage each of you as members to connect into the meditations for this week and the coming week. They really are tapping into one of the core ideas that I'm presenting in actually every course that I have sponsored. The most recent course is titled Giant Leap for Recovery in 14 Small Steps. And a big foundation of that whole course is to encourage everyone to recognize that when you have issues and questions about what therapy or therapies that you need to best pursue, or even if you've selected a therapy, how often or how big the dose, if it happens to be a medication, you can actually get those answers from asking your inner wisdom. And so what the meditations are doing is they're just giving you some new perspectives on how you can get insights into those particular answers. Most people have the idea that they can call a medical professional and they'll be able to have the correct answer for them to the questions that they have to ask. And, of course, it's always useful and helpful and instructional to get the advice and recommendations of healthcare professionals, so don't let me discourage you from doing that. But in the end, the whole purpose of the meditations for this week and the coming week, beginning on Memorial Day for those of us in the United States, is to provide some ways that you can basically tap into those inner instincts about the choices that you actually need to make. So be sure to look at those meditations. And of course, as a reminder, remember there are 12 pages that I update every day, every week, that basically provide the foundation, the support that is necessary for finding a sustained relief from the recovery of Parkinson's symptoms. So join us as a member, as you have already, and connect into those websites every day. The idea is that not that it be a chore or a burden for you to be able to take an hour or two out of every day to visit the websites. It really is to take 10 minutes at most to connect in, and I think you'll find inspiration that is exuding from each of those particular web pages. My second announcement for you is that the radio show interview this month turned out to be quite fascinating. The interview is with Dr. Antonio Costantini. Dr. Costantini is an Italian medical doctor. He does not speak English, but in the interview, as you will soon discover, his colleague Marco was able to translate and answer all of the questions that were actually addressed. Dr. Costantini has an approach for treating the symptoms of Parkinson's that is markedly different from what you will find from any medical professional in the Western world. Well, I suppose you could consider Italy as the Western world, so I should say the United States and Canada. His approach is to prescribe, depending on the severity and type of symptoms, a very, very high dose of thiamine, and thiamine is basically the generic term for vitamin B1. when he says high dose, he really does mean high dose. He's talking about a range of 1 gram to 4 grams per day. That's quite a bit of ingestion of vitamin B1. So listen to the interview and make your own judgment about whether or not this calls out to you. I have follow-up in several posts on Parkinson's Recovery blog and also on the member website to provide some support explanation for why some people would be expected to benefit from this particular therapy. I will provide at this point in time then a general explanation so that you can better understand why it is that he's getting results from a number of his patients. Now, when I say getting results, for those of you who haven't heard the interview, we're not talking here about a therapy that provides the silencing of all symptoms. That's not what this does. But it pretty clearly, according to his experience with about 2,500 patients, provides a welcome relief from symptoms, anywhere from 50 to 70%. Their report is also that particularly for individuals who are early on in experiencing symptoms of Parkinson's disease, it's possible that they actually can get a total reversal of all of the symptoms that they actually experience. So don't get me wrong. They're, I think, very transparent and have a lot of integrity about what their experience has been. And it's a rather fascinating kind of an idea. Now, why is it that this therapy might help some people? So what they didn't discuss in the radio show is what I actually write up on the blog. So I'll provide you with, again, a cryptic explanation of why this might help you or others. The reason is that the series of vitamin B vitamins is a series that is essential for the body to function, but the reason is that because of something called the myelination cycle, those B vitamins are converted into essential enzymes that the body needs to be able to function properly. So there's a conversion process that is required. Now, my perspective is unique in the sense that, of course, I've interviewed all of these researchers for all of these many years, and what I also now know from the work of bioacoustic pioneer Sherry Edwards, that many people, not all, but many people diagnosed with the symptoms of Parkinson's disease have a short circuiting in their myelination cycle. So that means that people may be taking their B vitamins, and I'm using a listing of all the B vitamins because that's a part of what the myelation cycle actually needs to convert the essential enzymes for the body to function. So the short-circuiting for individuals with Parkinson's disease means that somebody who has a modest level of or a dosage of B1 or thiazine is not able to be converted to the enzymes that the body actually needs. You may be thinking, well, I'll go out and I'll get the doctor to test whether or not I've got a normal range of thiamine in my body. And after, you know, paying $300 or $400 for the test, as it turns out, the result will likely be your range of thiamine levels is normal. That's one of the fascinating revelations I learned in my interview with Dr. Costanini. In his first patients, he speculated that it might have been a thiamine deficiency. So he tested thiamine, and he discovered, oh, goodness, maybe I'm wrong. The normal range is evident for this patient. And yet he pursued this issue because he suspected that this patient actually had a condition called Berry, B-E-R-I disease, a disease that likely you haven't heard anything about because it's more of a third or fourth world disease. So what is beriberi? Beriberi is a serious deficiency in thiamine or vitamin B1. What's fascinating, by the way, is if you do a search on beriberi and you look at the symptoms that are associated with that particular disease and that deficiency of vitamin B1, you're going to see a list that sounds and looks very similar to the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. Now, isn't that interesting? Let's step back then, and of course, what you can then conclude is, all right, even though I might have a normal range of thiamine in my bloodstream, it may be that if my methylation cycle is in fact short-circuiting, then I may be one of those individuals that does need to take a mega dose of vitamin B1 in order to be able to jump start my methylation cycle that has short-circuited. Now, why is the cycle short-circuited? Well, of course, there is a lot of dispute and disagreement about why, but I can tell you the one underlying explanation that, speaking as a researcher, makes the most sense to me is trauma and stress that is uncontrollable and, as it turns out, anxiety that's off the charts. When you're anxious, what happens is that methylation cycle is short-circuited. If you're living a life where you are often stressed and anxious, over time, that methylation cycle gets worn down, so to speak, and it is no longer fully functional. So at the core of everything, if you're asking yourself, well, what's the one thing you can do that will make a big difference in terms of quieting your symptoms, what I'm suggesting is, when we look at this research, address the issue of stress and anxiety in your life. That will lead to promoting a more fully functional methylation cycle so that the normal range of vitamin B1 that you are actually taking will indeed result in conversion to the enzymes that the body needs to function. Now, if you look at what do those enzymes do for your body, what you're going to discover is, ooh, they help you detox. Why is it? So many individuals diagnosed with Parkinson's disease do detox programs but are disappointed in the results. There it is, folks. You're not getting the enzymes that are required to take the detox protocols and make them effective. In terms of the nourishment of the neural networks, guess what? That's exactly what those neurons do. They promote the facilitation of the production of dopamine. In the end, you see, the enzymes are what is essential. It's not that the B1 is directly doing anything for your specific situation. In the end, another suggestion that I think you might want to pursue is thinking about vitamin B1 as a food source. Obviously, all these vitamins are available in food. There is a post that I have now released and published on the blog in a comment and a note from Aunt Bean, who about a year and a half ago began eating foods that had a high dose of thiamine. And these foods are mostly nuts, pistachio nuts, cashews, and walnuts, and other kind of nuts. You'll see that post on the blog. And what she discovers is that she's able to reduce the quantity of the natural fava bean tincture that she actually takes to quiet her own symptoms. Aunt Bean was discovering that her tincture was working miracles for her for a number of years, just as some medicines do for people, but she was having to take more and more tincture, in other words, more drops, in order to be able to see a sustained relief from the symptoms that she experienced. And so she continued to look, and she experimented with eating a lot of these nuts every day, and lo and behold, what she found was she was able to reduce the dosage of the fava bean tincture that she takes as a remedy. She doesn't take any prescription medicines. She finds the supplement of dopamine that she needs through the tincture that she makes. It's a homemade tincture. It's not anything that obviously she can actually purchase at a store. So in the end, that's my explanation of why the high-dose thiamine might be useful. The wonderful offer that you will find when you listen to the interview is Dr. Costantini mentioned that You can email him and request a consultation, which, get this, are free, which I thought was quite a wonderful offer. Now, I'm sure there are hundreds, if not thousands, of inquiries to obtain these free consultations. It may be difficult to get through to him, but I would certainly suggest that if you want to pursue this, that would be the resource that I would certainly approach to be able to see if you can some guidance on how to proceed. There are issues regarding, well, how much of the B1 do you take? Do you take 1 gram? Do you take 4 grams? In what form? They also have shots that sometimes they recommend for people who need a higher dosage. So they have a whole protocol they've developed over the last 20 years or so in being able to figure out how much thiamine a person actually might need. So it's not that everyone, I want to stress, is a person who happens to have a thiamine deficiency. But it looks to me like, clearly from Sherry Edwards' research, there are a number of people who do have this particular issue. And logically speaking to me, it makes good sense that at the core of why this myelation cycle is short-circuited winds up being anxiety and stress, which we know fuels the sympathetic nervous system and creates an override of that parasympathetic system, which is essential for you to be able to produce dopamine. That then particular radio show interview, I think you'll find to be quite interesting, and you'll probably think of some steps you might want to consider to see if, in fact, you might be one of those individuals that will benefit from a high dose of thiamine. I also have a question that I want to read and comment on, and it is as follows from Valerie. I never heard of the coffee bomb until it was mentioned a few times as I was listening to you. If I look on the internet, there are all kinds of products to make or buy. What do you recommend if I want to try this, and what is the expected result? Let me first explain what is really involved with what is described to be the coffee bomb. The coffee bomb is basically a drink that is taken in the morning, and it contains high fat, which may consist of MCT oil, coconut oil, get this, butter, which of course is dairy and would not be recommended for persons with Parkinson's, even whipped cream of all things. Why would a person who takes something like that, that has such high fat, be expected to see some kind of relief from Parkinson's symptoms? Well, the connection here is to the production of ketones in the body. Ketones are the natural food for the brain. So the brain functions, as I'm sure you've probably heard, on glucose. Glucose, of course, is developed from sugars that we actually eat, from perhaps even the juices that we drink or the fruits that we eat, and other foods as well. The natural source of the food that the brain must have to thrive and survive winds up being something called ketones. Ketones are naturally made in the liver. What produces ketones, as it turns out, it winds up being two kind of trigger mechanisms. One is fasting, and the other trigger mechanism winds up being high fat diets. People who have epileptic fits, which of course is a neurological challenge, are oftentimes recommended to take a high ketone diet, which is a high fat diet. The researchers have discovered that this can reduce the severity of the epileptic seizures and the frequency as well. In the end, as it turns out, the better fuel for the brain obviously is the natural food, which happens to be the ketones that are naturally produced by the body. So in the end, what really is happening here is you are facilitating the natural production of ketones in your body. In the Giant Leap for Recovery course that I'm actually teaching here this month and next, one of the 14 steps, the small steps that I'm recommending will facilitate that giant leap in recovery is to fast at least three times a week, if not every night. Now, when I say fast, I mean you eat a relatively early dinner, and that might be around 7 o'clock, let's say, or earlier. The next meal then you eat in the morning would come at least 12 or preferably 14 hours later. Now, that is a form of fasting. It's not onerous. You just can't have those late-night snacks or popcorn treats while you're perhaps watching a late-night program. But it means that you don't eat anything for that period of time, and that's literally what does produce the ketones naturally in your body. You don't have to do the coffee kind of drink in order to be able to produce the ketones necessarily. Now, the source that's really a wonderful source on ketones is Bill Curtis. I interviewed Bill back December of 2017. That particular program is available here on the member website, the radio page. If you'll click on the category ketones, you'll see there is that interview. So if you want to learn more about Bill's approach, be sure to listen to that discussion. Bill reported that he continued to take 5 Parkinson's medications, and yet he was not experiencing any side effects, nor did he have to increase his medications. In fact, I think he even said he could eliminate one and might have been able to reduce the dosage of some others in consultation with his doctor. Why? Well, because Bill has been taking this cocktail, coffee bomb as they call it, in the morning. He's been fasting. He also sometimes takes ketone salts, and there's a very specific type of salt that would be recommended. Most of them are just basically going to be something that you're wasting your money on. And in addition, something that is an exciting update that I can report for absolutely everyone in my audience is that just recently, and here I'm talking this month, there has been the possibility of producing a ketone ester in a laboratory at a reasonable cost. Researchers, and in particular Dr. Veach at NIH, has been researching ketones for 20 years, specifically with an interest in facilitating the healing of Parkinson's disease. Dr. Veach has known how to produce ketones in the lab for many years, but the cost has been prohibitive. Just recently, Dr. Veach and a colleague from Austin engaged in a research project for the U.S. Army, and that project involved figuring out how to produce an ester in the laboratory that actually could be given to soldiers who had to be out in the field for weeks on end. In other words, that would be the food that their soldiers needed. They didn't have to then carry pounds and pounds of actual physical product. They would just basically live off of the ketones for the most part. As a result of that research, the good news is that they actually did figure out how you could produce a ketone ester in the laboratory at a reasonable cost. So if you're really asking the question, all right, I'm confused about really all these choices. So the answer is, what does your body need in order to be able to make a sufficient quantity of ketones each and every day? And what each person needs to do is to begin to experiment with some combination of fasting, perhaps drinking a coffee bomb that is a coffee drink that has a concentration of high fats, or maybe not. Perhaps taking ketone salts. Now, the one that is recommended by the person who is manufacturing the ketone ester, Frank LaZola, basically is a ketone is a salt that only produces perhaps 5 grams or 6 grams a day. So it provides some jump in the ketones that are necessary, but it's not a huge leap, so to speak. But what Bill Curtis has been doing is he's experimenting with taking the salts and taking the cocktail in the morning, and he's changed that over time, by the way, and then, of course, in fasting. And then what Bill has done is he's also been able to obtain some of the ketone ester, and he's been taking that on occasion. Now, you can't take that every day. I should say most people would not be able to afford being able to drink a ketone ester every day. The cost is approximately $1 a gram right now. Hopefully that will be reduced significantly. How much do you need a day? Well, it's going to vary from person to person, but on average it's 35 grams, so that would be $35. Well, I don't know about you, but I couldn't afford $35 a day for ester, and Bill can't either. But what he does is he's acquired some ester, and he takes that on occasion, and maybe not as much as the 35 grams a day. In other words, because he's getting some ketones that are produced in his body from fasting and from his salts and from his coffee bomb, I think what basically he's wound up doing is taking much less of the ester every day, so it becomes much more feasible in terms of cost. Those of you who are called out to pursue this, and I think this is going to be huge for anyone with Parkinson's, and I want to say it again, I'm excited about this because it looks to me like this will help people who are at the edge of taking medicines they can't take anymore because they're at their max and are experiencing dyskinesia. I believe, based on Bill's experience, that you'll be able to pursue this ketone regimen. In other words, instead of making glucose to fuel your brain cells, you are naturally producing ketones through your liver to produce the food for your brain. And in the end, that, I think, is going to allow many people who are really at their wits' end, because the next resort step might be deep brain stimulation surgery, or as is recommended by their medical professionals, or focused ultrasound, which is less invasive but also very expensive and requires multiple treatments. This might be another alternative that will enable individuals to not have to increase medicines, in fact, might even be able to reduce medicines. So it's not a cure. There's not ever going to be a cure, so to speak. But it may provide symptomatic relief that will be much, much welcomed by many, many individuals. I want to encourage everyone to contact Frank from Ketone Aid and explore the possibility of obtaining some ester from him. I believe he's now opened up a few private sales. You're not going to be able to go to our website and get them, but you can get them if you contact Frank. Now, his website is ketoneaid.com, KETONEAID.com. In the website that he has, you'll notice that the emphasis is on athletes, because athletes will find that they get an edge in their ability to compete. And there's been some evidence, research evidence, to support that. We don't have any evidence for Parkinson's for the most part, so this is in the early stages of investigation. We don't have any reports specifically, other than Frank tells me one individual who's actually a Parkinson's recovery member, who I don't think we'll be able to call in today, but wanted to, has had a spectacular experience with ketone esters. He's been able to improve his sleep significantly, as well as see sustained relief from other symptoms. So he, I think, will be able to connect in with us 1 week, 1 month from today at our June Parkinson's Recovery Support Group meeting. So one very, very encouraging success story. And also one story, according to Frank, where a person was disappointed with the results, did not really feel as though it had benefited him at all. So far, we've got Bill Curtis as a report on what has been beneficial to him. And you can follow up with Bill. He readily makes his contact information available on the radio show, so you can email him, contact him. He's there to help others on their own journey toward recovery from the symptoms that you experience. So you can connect with Bill, you can connect with Frank, see if you can obtain some of the ketone ester. Again, you just can't go on a website right now and purchase it. They have limited quantities, and they're still working through reducing the cost of producing the ester. I might also say, if there are some of you who are members who purchased the pre-order of the ester, you actually were able to obtain some of the ester at half the actual cost it was necessary to produce it. So Frank didn't know how much it would cost, and he ran into lots of overages in terms of the production of the initial ester that he was able to produce in his lab. They're now on the second runs, and they've got some improvement in equipment and process, and so the cost has been a bit less, thankfully. And I think over time you'll see less and less cost, so it will become much more of a feasible product for everyone. That's the exciting development from 2018. I'll be summarizing this and many of the other exciting developments that we've unearthed here over the last 12 months in an update to Road to Recovery from Parkinson's Disease. Instead of actually adding these to the book, I'm going to write just a separate update, so that will be something that people can get who already have the book. There are many thousands of people that already have the book, so I didn't want to just say, okay, buy the book again. You don't need to do that. What I wanted to do is to write a little what's called a 2000 and update to Road to Recovery. So we're going to summarize all of the, I think I have to say, exciting inventions and discoveries that we've been able to identify here just in the last 12 months, just since I last updated Road to Recovery from Parkinson's. So the ketone ester is one of the exciting developments. The vitamin B1 is another exciting development. The biophoton therapy is still another exciting development. The electromagnetic field or pulse therapy, known as the Beamer, another exciting development. I mean, it's, for me, been an exciting year, more so than perhaps any of the previous 14 years, in terms of all of a sudden, all of these wonderful possibilities are popping up for, I think, providing options for people to consider how they can get sustained relief from their symptoms. Now, all of these options are options that still are suppressing symptoms. And so we're not talking about anything that's going to, in the long run for most people, be a solution. But in the end, these are options to medicines and other supplements that have been used by people to address the symptoms that they actually experience. So that's my response to the question, Valerie, that you ask. And when you say what kind of products to make or to buy, again, think in terms of the fact that how your body makes ketones, what it needs in order to produce ketones, and so you have to really experiment some with a combination of choices in order to be able to produce the ketones that your body needs in order to be able to get sustained relief from whatever symptoms you might be experiencing. So it takes some degree of experimentation to figure out what you really need to do. And again, the combination of possibilities are fasting, the coffee drink, which is basically a high-fat infusion first thing in the morning after a fast the night before, ketone salts. And again, I just want to caution you, there are lots of salts that are out there, and most of them are not worth purchasing. But Frank has one that he strongly recommends, and so you can connect with Frank to find out which one that is. And then, of course, now the really exciting way to supplement the body's ability to manufacture ketones winds up being the ketone ester. And again, what Frank wanted me to let everyone know about is, if you contact him, I think he does have a limited supply that he's just been able to acquire of the ester just this last week. And Frank is very interested and enthused about seeing how this might help persons with Parkinson's disease. You'll see on his main website, as I've already mentioned, there's an emphasis for athletes. And that's because there's been research on that specifically, and so he feels like he's not out there on a limb to be able to promote this as something that helps the athletes. There's nothing about Parkinson's or any other kind of a condition. But I think Frank is enthusiastic that we'll be able to have some initial experimentation, trial and error with persons who experience Parkinson's, and we'll learn a lot about how much ester will help and who it might help. It may be it's not going to help everyone. We really don't know. Again, no research on this specifically with the ester. It's brand new, but it's certainly something that if you're a person who's interested in being a pioneer, go for it. This is one that I think might really provide some exciting benefit to many people. So actions that you can take to be now in a summary place would be listen to the interview with Bill Curtis. You can get that here on the member website. Number two, contact Frank at theketoneaid.com and explore with Frank the possibility of actually purchasing some ketone ester, and make sure that you purchase the salt that Frank recommends. And so you can take some of the salt every day. And again, that's something that also facilitates the production of ketones. I'm going to now stop, and I've covered the kind of preview that I wanted to be sure to make. I responded to the question that I got here for our support group. I'm going to check the chat room to see if we've got any particular questions or comments or topics. I don't see anything there. So let me go into our page where folks call in and connect with those of you who've actually called in to say hello, how are you, what's up, what kind of topics do you want to discuss, et cetera, et cetera. So I have three individuals who've called in today live with our particular support group gathering, and I want to connect with each of you to say hi, what's up, any topics you want to discuss, questions or follow-ups that you want to pursue, and see where we go from there. And those of you who are listening and don't want to actually call in, again, please type any other questions or topics that you want us to discuss, and we'll be sure to cover those before we conclude our support group gathering here for this month of May 2018. Let me connect in then first with Deborah from California. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Robert. Can you hear me?
We sure can. And how are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to connect with you today.
Good. That's wonderful to hear.
I had one question backing up to that coffee bomb. Is there any way, if you're not a coffee drinker, can you use tea, or does it have to be coffee?
I don't think it has to be coffee, no. There is some research indicating coffee facilitates issues associated with Parkinson's, and there's also some research indicating green tea. So I've never been asked that question, Deborah, and I don't have any evidence from anyone who's gone to a coffee substitute, but from what research I can see about green tea, I'd recommend you use green tea. Is that something that you can drink or like to drink, green tea?
Yes, that would work out fine.
Oh, great. Well, to learn more about the research on green tea, Richard Melvin, who has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, is a person I had as a guest on the radio show, and Richard actually just updated some of the information he had about coffee and green tea that I posted on the blog. And basically what Richard is saying is, okay, there's quite a bit of evidence here that that could facilitate some relief from symptoms. So I would recommend, Deborah, instead of coffee, try the green tea. Remember, the point of this is the high fat intake. That's what you're really after. And so the real choices for you wind up being, all right, what do you want to add to the drink in order to get that high fat content? And MCT oil is usually a pretty good choice because, boy, that's so concentrated with fat. Coconut oil is usually a good choice. Now, when we go down to the Kerry butter, I think it's called, or the high-fat butter, and mm-hmm. the whipped cream, well, those are both dairy products. So whether those would be advisable for you or for anyone is questionable. I think Bill has done the whipped cream and the butter for a while, and he felt like that was useful. But I think the key with the drink is just to create something that works for you and your needs, and also remember what you're wanting to do is to have an infusion of high fat in the morning.
I'll try that, Robert.
Okay, sounds good. Well, let us know how it goes. Did you have any other topics or questions that we need to discuss?
I did want to just tell you that I did rent a Beamer.
Oh, you did?
I've been using it for 2 weeks. And I haven't seen significant changes, but I'm feeling really good. And so
oh, my
I'm
God. That's wonderful to hear. What I've learned about the Beamer, Deborah, is that it's not something that you can expect to experience immediate relief at all, that it really
right.
takes, for most persons with neurological challenges, a month to 6 weeks. So are you planning on renting it for maybe 2 months anyway?
Well, actually, I've only rented it for a month because it is a little bit costly. And so I think after the month, I might consider going ahead and purchasing it because of the
oh, just purchasing it, yep. Yeah, that's of course, as you know, what I did for my daughter. So I became what's an independent distributor, which is something obviously you can do too. So the one thing
and
I
the one
just might.
Mom,
yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, my daughter was in such a place where I just felt like I had to try something for her because we'd really tried everything. And we then decided, okay, we'll try the Beamer. I didn't have the $6,000 in a bank account to pay for it, but I learned through talking with Ross Pelton that there's this interest-free credit card for 18 months from Citibank. It's called Simplicity. So I just contacted them, and it was pretty easy to be able to get that credit card. So you don't pay any interest at all. So if you're paying back $300 or so a month, you're able to pay the whole thing off in 18 months. So that was the way I was able to afford getting the Beamer. And, boy, I have not regretted it one bit. She's just so much better. So it's been almost a miracle for our family.
That's great. Well, you know, the one model is a little less expensive. The one that's not all computerized. I mean, with all the fancy gadgets, the Classic it's called.
Uh-huh.
And that's the one that I've actually rented just because I thought it was a little simpler than having to, you know, kind of play around with all the screens and I didn't want to get things messed up. So if I purchased that one, I think it would be a little bit more reasonable.
So you're talking about the Classic version?
The Classic version, they said it does everything that the Pro does, the professional one does. It's just not as sophisticated as far as being able to do some of the things.
Deborah,
you know,
that's
special.
That's true. However, I would recommend that you still seriously consider what's called the Beamer Pro, not the Beamer Classic. And in a way, yes, that's right, that the Classic pretty much does what the Pro does. But there are several significant advantages to the Pro that, for me, outweigh the choice of saving $1,000. And as it turns out, the Pro version, what they're doing is, for any programming updates, and we will see programming updates for the Beamer. It's going to get more sophisticated over time. They will send those programming updates to you if you have a Pro for free, zero cost. That's incredible. It's like, whoa, they're not doing that for the Classic, but they are doing that for the Pro. So in most of these, you know, sophisticated programs, oh, we've got an update for you. Well, that'll be, you know, $450. But not this company. It's going to be like 5-10 years later. They will have improvements and sophistications in the technology. It's already pretty sophisticated. But, I mean, you know, they're going to make improvements. and we're going to be able to update our Beamer Pros for zero cost.
I didn't hear anything about that.
That is huge. And the other advantage is for the Pro, it's much easier to have the both outlets so that you can do two things at the same time.
That's
For example, if in a situation where you're sleeping, if there's somebody else there in the bed with you, they can get the sleepy program too. You can both take advantage of the sleep program if you have the Pro.
And you do that with just purchasing an extra mat?
Yep. Yes, that's it. You get an extra mat, and you can both do the sleep program. And actually, that's what Deborah and I have decided we want to do. We can't quite afford another Pro yet. We already just bought one for the daughter, but we want to get one and start using the sleep program. Now, you probably already know this because you're using the Beamer now, but the sleep program should be started about 6 weeks after you begin using it. Have you been using the sleep program at all yet?
No, I haven't, because I know you had talked about that in another program before when it's been mentioned. So I had originally, like I said, thought of renting it for 6 weeks or for 2 months, actually, so I could try the sleep program. But like I said, it's $300 a week to rent. So by the time you would do that, you've almost paid for a device.
Yeah, that's pretty expensive. Sophisticated equipment, and you know it is going to cost at least that much to rent. So yeah, when you get up to 6 weeks, you're talking about a lot of money. And then of course it's going to take some. I mean, then you start using the sleep program at the 6 week point, and you only start using it once a week, you know, in the beginning, and then you have to gradually increase. And so it's a gradual process. And then of course when you get up to the point where you'd be using the sleep program pretty much every night, and then in the end, Deborah, we're at the early stages of knowing how this is going to work for persons with neurological challenges, but I think my wisdom tells me that it's the sleep program in the long run that's going to really work miracles for people, because that's where healing happens when we're sleeping. And if people are not dropping down to the REM or those deep levels of sleep, they're not going to heal. But if they can, and over a period of time, then bingo, I think we're going to see really wonderful things happen for people. So I think it's the sleep program in the end that's going to be the really home run. And, of course, the other benefit is the initial stages of just getting the body back, you know, so that we're oxygenating the body and the cells. Well, that's huge, too, no doubt about it. So if we can get the blood to circulate down to the little tiny capillaries like it needs to, and if we can get the waste removed, and if we can get the nourishment to the cells, well, that's huge in itself. That's probably why you're feeling so much better. But in the end, to really heal any kind of neurological challenges, I think the sleep program is probably going to be the key.
Okay, that's good. Well, I'm so glad I mentioned that about different models, because I didn't get any of that information.
Yeah, I would just say hands down, if you're going to purchase it, do the Pro. Don't do what's called the Classic. And again, yes, it does the same thing, but in the long run, it's not the preferred choice.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that information.
Oh, you're welcome, Deborah. And shoot, if you decide you want to purchase one, I'd be happy to sign you up. You'd be a part of Ross Pelton's team and myself. And I'm encouraging people with Parkinson's to do that so that we can, you know, have a tracking for everyone so that we'll know how things are going.
Okay, well, I will definitely keep that in mind.
Sounds great. Well, thanks so much for being here today at our support group meeting. And now I want to say hello to Bill. Bill, how are you today?
Hey, Robin, how are you doing?
Well, not poorly at all, actually. We have a beautiful day here in Washington. It's been a rare occurrence the last 6 months or 8 months. We've been mopey for a long time, so it's nice to have the sun out.
Excellent. Well, I have two questions. Is it okay if I ask them now?
Oh, please do. Yes, we have three folks who called in, only three, so we want to make sure to discuss all the issues that you got.
Okay, I have one sort of specific and one general. The specific one, it has to do with diet, and I've read numerous places that there's a kind of toxic mold that tends to grow on certain crops, particularly peanuts, corn, and some other nuts called aflatoxin, that is counterindicated for everybody, but particularly people with neurological diseases. Do you have an opinion about that? Are you aware of that?
I am aware, and yes, it's potentially an issue, no doubt about that. Of course, you can get a lot of nutrition from nuts, and it, as we were saying earlier, it's a source of high thiamine. So my kind of spin on that, Bill, is, all right, so what do you do, not eat that kind of food? And my sense is, well, no, that's not the preferred choice. The preferred choice is to say, number one, yes, that is a problem for those kind of crops. So what you have to do is to make sure that you obtain a certifiably organic source. Now, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be free of these issues, but at least you've got one step ahead. So the local farmers, especially those of us in this Western world, are now producing crops, and so it's a little easier to get the organic than it is in the middle of the winter. So the first kind of choice can be, okay, do organic. And then I think the second comment or perspective that I've got to share with you is the following. That's one issue among other potential exposures. That's only one. After all, we live in a pretty toxic world. I mean, you know, we go outside and breathe, and guess what? We've got toxins. We drink water. So we think, no, all the water I drink is pure. Well, if you're drinking sips of water from a restaurant, chances are you're getting some toxins. All right, so we can't avoid it. I don't care how careful we are. And so I think that the way to think about this is to say, all right, my challenge is to strengthen my immune system as much as I can possibly strengthen it. And think sort of at that core level of just make sure your immune system is really as strong as it can possibly be. And so what that means is, okay, you buy a batch of nuts. Okay, they were great. They were really tasty, but they had this awful bacterial or fungus infection in it. All right, so your body sees that, and your body can naturally get rid of it. But the immune system has to be pretty functional in order to make sure that that happens sufficiently. So the key really is the immune system functioning the way it needs to? And so then the question becomes, all right, how do you make sure that your immune system is as functional as possible? And, of course, the answers are really logical, drinking a lot of fresh water, drinking lots of organic foods, exercising makes a huge difference. And then the other little tip that I can give to you in a natural sense for enhancing your immune system is you can actually, when you're taking a shower, turn the shower down to the cold for about 30 seconds right at the end. So you get a huge infusion of cold water. There's a interview that I attempted to pull off a couple of years ago, but we had connection problems with a man who's known internationally from, I believe, Sweden, known as the Ice Man. And he has, I think, pretty convincingly proved that you can strengthen your immune system by exposure to cold. And so one of the ways to do that is to sort of just as a routine find ways to just expose your body to really extreme cold. I don't mean for long periods of time. And somehow, as it turns out, that shocks the immune system into becoming stronger. So his name is the Iceman. You might want to do a search. He's pretty easy to find. And he's really incredible in the sense that he does this as a ritual, exposing himself to, for instance, taking a shower and making sure that you got the cold water turned on for part of it. And he's gone into a hospital And he said, look, my immune system is good to go. You infect me with the most serious, the most dangerous bacterial infection possible, and then watch what happens. And so there's a whole video on YouTube that I guess is pretty popular. And so he sits in a hospital bed, and the medical doctors say, you know, look, you've got to sign this release. You know, we do not recommend that you do this. This is this kills people, et cetera, et cetera. He says, no. Signs the release, and you see the medical people giving him the horrible, horrible bacterial infection shot. And you see him, he had a little struggle there for about a couple of minutes where it was clear that he was, you know, beginning to be nauseous and having some problems. But then, I don't know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes later, he was good. he was ready to leave the hospital. And again, that's what the immune system will do for you. That's it, is you want a strong immune system. And the final little tip is there is something that a lot of people have gravitated to, and that's low-dose naltrexone, L-D-N. And the reason that has benefited some people is for the same reason. It tricks the immune system into becoming stronger. Now, I mention L-D-N as a last option because it is a prescription medicine that has side effects, and it will create toxins in the liver. So it's probably not the best or the most natural way that you can produce a healthy immune system, but it is something that really will work over time. So low-dose naltrexone, many neurologists will not prescribe this. Some will, some won't, but often you can get a local practitioner to prescribe it because there is evidence in some studies that indicate that it facilitates healing neurological challenges. So in the end, my long answer to your short question is, yeah, that's a problem. Yes, it can be associated with aggravating Parkinson's symptoms. There's no doubt about that. And yet, what do you do about it? And then what I'm suggesting is, in the big picture, okay, just strengthen the immune system.
Okay. What's particularly disconcerting about this to me is that the FDA has sort of thrown up its hands and set a what they call a minimum limit, which isn't zero, where it's okay to have a certain amount of this mold in your peanut butter or your almonds or whatever. And that seems like an absurd point of view to me.
It does to me too, Bill.
And once you know about this, then you're paranoid. I mean, I personally love peanut butter, but I mean, I'm willing to forego it if it's going to do me some damage.
Well, yes. Where are you getting your peanut butter?
Well, I try, you know, buy organic, but I mean, I've done some research on this, and it's what causes this mold is not so much the organic or not organic. It comes from storage where under the wrong conditions, high humidity conditions, for
right.
example.
Yeah, that's my sense.
And can occur.
That's my sense, too. It's not so much organic, although you know, have a little benefit from that. Well, one choice that I would recommend to you is, have you ever seen a source of peanut butter or almond butter in a Whole Food store or a co-op where you take the peanuts or the almonds or the nuts and you actually grind them into a container?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Oh, you do that already?
I figure that's the safest bet.
That's my guess too, Bill. I think that's the safest bet. So the storage issue is not so much of a problem. Although obviously, if you know, you can still have the problem with just the contaminants to the nuts themselves. But my guess is once it's ground up, is probably where the problem really occurs. So if you just use that, that's what I do. And I personally, first of all, it tastes so much better than any of the stuff that's just in the containers and stored.
Right.
And, My guess is you'll probably be pretty safe by just doing it that way.
Okay. And I had a general question. Can I ask you that?
Of course.
I've had, as I mentioned in the past, my main Parkinson's thing is balance or lack of balance. And I've had a whole series of doctors badger me to use a walker, to use a cane, to... You know, and my personal feeling is I've been resisting this because I feel the more dependent I become on something, the less likely it is that I'm ever going to stop using it. And I understand they're coming from a point of view where they don't want me to hurt my fall and break a hip or whatever, which is the common thing that people say. But I think the downside is once you start using a crutch, you depend on that crutch. I'd rather not do that. So I wonder what your opinion is on that issue.
You know, my sense is very similar to yours. And if you're all of a sudden going to something like a walker, it's as if you are also embracing the expectation you're going to get worse. And that's the last thing that you want to have. You want to hold the expectation
right.
that healing is happening. So it seems to me that activates the wrong thought form. An issue with walkers is that it really destroys posture. So most walkers,
right.
yes, they do prevent people from falling. That's certainly a benefit. But boy, if you look at what that does to a person's posture, you're not going to have much of a chance of being able to heal issues with falls and balances if you depend on a walker, but just because of the balance issues that it creates, because of the posture issues.
Right.
So
right.
there was a person that I wish I had been able to recontact, but I lost contact with them about 10 years ago. Max, who had Parkinson's symptoms, was an inventor, and he was inventing a system where four persons with Parkinson's symptoms that was not a walker per se, but it was something that would you could hold yourself up and have the right posture. I never saw that commercially produced. I wish it had been. But walkers, in generally, are the worst things that you can get for issues with posture. They are just absolutely awful. So in terms of
options... Well, I'm glad to hear that because that comports to my point of view as well. So
I'm with you. Bill, I am with you on that. I mean, just watch somebody
okay.
use a walker. Look at their posture and ask yourself, okay, wait a minute. If they're not on their walker, what's the chance they'll fall? My guess is it increases the probability that a person will fall when they just don't have access to their walker.
Exactly, because there's not every circumstance isn't walker friendly, let's put it that way.
Exactly. You can't always have your walker accessible, so I don't think it's a good idea myself. In terms of promoting posture, it seems to me that the way to broaden your perspective on those issues is to realize it's not just a muscular issue, it's not just a postural issue, although those clearly are factors. It is also a sight issue, it's a visual issue, and it is a hearing issue.
Yeah.
So realizing it's all three can really help you strengthen the integrity of your posture. So a lot of people that have balance problems are thinking, well, it's just some kind of neurological issue. It very well could be a sight issue or it could be a hearing issue, more so than any kind of a postural instability.
Right. And I think unless you make the effort to walk as normally as you can, you're never going to regain any kind of confidence in your ability to get around once you start depending on a walker. And
yeah.
I really feel it's very strong. And it's like a core belief with these neurologists that, we have to keep you safe kind of thing. And I understand that they mean well, but I don't think they're doing you any favors by getting you on a crutch that you're going to have difficulty getting away from.
I totally concur, Bill. That's my sentiment exactly. There's one... When you're talking about canes, for example, there is one option that you might consider that is anything but a cane, and that is ski poles when you're walking. Have you ever done that? It doesn't have to be a ski pole. It could just be two, basically...
My problem is not so much walking as it is when I have to stand motionless and talk to somebody or whatever, that's when I start to kind of sway and begin possibly to lose my balance if I have to stand there for more than a minute or two.
Oh.
So I can walk okay as long as I'm not distracted or in a crowd or whatever. I can walk. You know, I look like I got Parkinson's and I look clumsy, but I'm not in danger of falling down.
Oh, good.
But so standing still is, and that's why sometimes I'll use a cane just so I got a point I can lean on the cane. But once I start walking, I actually don't even use the cane.
You don't need it at all. And I think in maybe a previous conversation that we had some discussion about martial arts. Have you ever had any experience with that?
Yeah, I should probably try that again. I tried early on. I tried Tai Chi, and I just didn't like it. It was too slow and kind of laborious for me.
Right. Well, my thought was not so much the Tai Chi or the Qigong, but rather the what's called martial arts, where they're teaching people how to basically strengthen what's called the Tan Tin, which is that little spot a couple of inches below the belly button. The Tan Tin is the source of incredible power that these martial artists, that you know, you see in the movie where they do these incredible feats of taking their hand and without even touching a person, basically pushing their hand, and then the person is smashed against the wall, but they don't even touch their opponent, you know.
Right.
So they're doing that because they've got a strong Tan Tin, that little power source right in the middle of the body. And since your issue is standing, I'm thinking that if you begin to just take some martial arts classes, you might find that will really be strengthened immeasurably.
That's a good suggestion. The other thing I haven't done yet, but I'm interested in doing, is this rock steady boxing.
Great idea. Yes, of course. That's a similar kind of training. In fact, I think when you do martial arts, you'll find that it's similar to that. And you don't have to do the rock steady boxing. Any kind of a boxing training place would provide support of that nature. So that's clearly benefited quite a few people. So that's a wonderful program as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely considering doing that.
Yeah. So strengthening that core, inner core. And then there's another therapy called Pilates. Have you ever pursued that?
My wife has done that in the past. So I have some familiarity with it.
So if you know a little bit about it, I'll just ask you, does that call out to you at all? Or is that something that you think, no, that's not going to work?
I'd have to actually take a class or observe a class at the least to know. But that's another good suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah, I would suggest at least considering that as an option. It does the same thing. And you can do classes, or they have machines. And so you can go, once you learn how to use the machines, it's very inexpensive to go and just, you know, go to the room that has the machines and use those for, let's say, three times a week for a while and see if you can't strengthen that core. That does the same thing as martial arts does. And so when you're standing, I think you'd find you'd feel so much more stable, so much more.
Yeah. Pilates is core strengthening for the most part, right?
Exactly, and that's what you need, exactly what you need. The reason you're feeling unsteady is there's too much energy up around your head. You're top heavy.
Yeah, I've been accused of that before I even had Parkinson's.
Well, Bill, you know, we've talked a number of different times, and you are a mental person. You know, you are
right.
You are an intelligent man, and so you're running your energy around your head, and that's your great gift. That's your that's your skill. But in terms of issues of balance, physical balance, you need to move the energy down to the core, and that's what these physical kind of options do, the Pilates and the martial arts and the rock steady boxing. That's what they do. So you have to sort of just realize, all right, It's not that you ever want to degrade or minimize that incredible gift. What you want to do is rather to support that with strengthening your core, and it's a physical strength.
Yeah, well, I think that's excellent advice, and advice actually my wife is not quite in those same terms, but it's basically telling me the same thing you just told me. So.
Oh, she does. You'll have to tell her I said the same thing. That's funny.
As soon as I get off, I'm going to tell her Robert agrees with you.
That's good. And maybe you can go to a class together. It'd be something you could do together.
Yeah, I would actually consider that, because I know she's gone in the past Pilates, and she's been urging me on this rock steady boxing thing.
Okay, well, maybe one or the other or both would be great. See where it goes.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Robert. I appreciate all your help and advice, and I hope it's useful to other people as well.
Oh, you're welcome, Bill. Thank you so much for being here as well with all of your wonderful suggestions for others. So let me now, we have one more person who's called in so far, and that's Bana. Bana, hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm fine. I am fine. I'm not that young man's wife, but I was going to tell him about Pilates, but you jumped the gun. So I have gone to Pilates, and it has helped me to breathe better and just to strengthen my core.
Good.
So tell your wife that I'm on the same bandwagon as well.
That's great, Bonna. It's great that you called in, that you could follow up with that.
Well, I was going to follow up with this. Also, I was going to mention the sticks. I do have two long sticks that I use when my husband and I go for a walk, and I walk about a mile to a mile and a half when I do go walking with him.
Yeah.
And the sticks I got years ago, but you can now buy sticks that collapse down to about 12 inches.
Yeah.
So if you go on the website, you can get these. They look like ski sticks, but they're really for walking. So they're sort of slanted a certain way where you can go, you know, do the crosswalking when you're walking, so that exercises your arms as well. But I just wanted to mention that September 4th, 2017, I fell and fractured my left humerus and my pelvic, so I was flat on my back for quite a while. And so I couldn't even feed myself because I have a malfunctioning right hand, and I busted my left side.
Oh, no.
So I started out with a Hemi walker, and talk about being bent over. I looked like I was a human snail. I was so bent over trying to take one step at a time as I was in the hospital. Then I came home and used the Hemi walker for a while, and then I graduated to the bilateral walker. And I think if it weren't for the encouragement of my husband, who just would take my hand when I would go out on a shopping spree or something like that, I now walk without a walker, and I have been walking without a walker for a long time.
But when we go
for a walk, like the mile and a half, I use those walking sticks. And that's a comfortable thing to be able to use those in case I do feel a little bit dizzy or whatever.
Right. And, you know, the other thing I've heard other people say is that when you're using those walking sticks, there's not the feeling that you are in any way disabled or not able to function as others. I mean, skiers use those when they ski. You know, I mean, it's a normal thing to use. So it's not as if you're handicapped. You're just doing something that's really smart and fun.
When I used these years ago, and I had sort of like a crick feeling in my hip, and my husband said, let's go for a walk. I said, well, I got a crick in my hip. When I used those sticks, it sort of took the pressure off of all my joints as I walked.
Yeah, right, right.
And the crosswalking. So I started walking with him on that particular day, and I couldn't even feel any crick or anything in my hip, and it exercised and anointed my hip joint, you know, just to be able to walk.
Right.
So that's what I wanted to say about that. I'm like, what's his name? Like a box of chocolates. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, but I think you've got some other topics on it.
I
have a question that I just wanted to raise that I just saw from Julie. It says, if one has used a walker and wants to stop using it, how would one do that? It seems like to me you're the expert on that. So you just described that you did do that. Is there any other clarification you want to offer to Julie?
Of course, I had my husband that offered me a hand when I walked in, you know, in the shopping centers and, you know, in the grocery stores and stuff like that. He'd hold my hand as I walked across the street to try to avoid getting run over by a car or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's about what I did. And I was getting OT and PT here at home through Medicare.
Yeah.
And I had started getting a little distance away from my walker. And the OT said, no, you need to have that walker right there. And my attitude was, no, I don't. I don't need to have the walker right there because I felt as though I was confident that I wouldn't fall.
Right.
But when I first got home from the hospital and I had a hemi walker and I needed to go to the restroom, my husband said, good, get up and go. I just started crying because I just don't know, I feel secure using even a hemi walker.
Oh.
And now I walk around all over. I don't know other than just trying to get rid of the feeling of feeling foggy-headed or dizzy has helped me. And that goes into the next subject. I don't know that I can really give her an answer about how to go to the walker and get away from the walker. My posture still leaves a lot to be desired. My right shoulder seems to go down more than my left because I've been told that I have osteoporosis of the spine. It's probably a circle. It's probably an S by now. I don't know.
Yeah.
But what I've done, I found out about this Buteyko breathing.
Uh-huh.
It's Buteyko. B as in boy, U as in uncle, T as in Tom, E as in elephant, Y as in yellow, and K as in kite, and O as in Oscar. And it took my chiropractor to tell me about that. My chiropractor told me also that he thought I had a nerve in my spine that was maybe compressed, so he's been working on that. Anyway, I went to the website and started searching for Buteyko, and there's a lot of YouTube lessons out there to teach you how to do it. I'm not an expert at it, and I'm not recommending anybody do it because I don't want to hold me responsible, but I had a sister who had some problems with her breathing, so she had a sleep study done. So because I snore, I've been told I snore. I don't ever hear it because I'm asleep. Because I've been told that I snored, I went in for a sleep study, and I have severe snoring. So I was diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea. And so there's some time during the night when I'm sleeping that either I stop breathing or my absorption of oxygen could be like 89 or 90, something like that. So I went in for a second study and had a CPAP sleep study done. And they said I have a mild case of obstructive sleep apnea. And that, yes, I could benefit from a CPAP. I don't know anybody out here who's already had a CPAP, but I was fitted for one that one night. And what I've been working to do is get into more deep sleep, deep REM sleep, as much as possible
right. At
night. And so this Buteyko stuff, because I was a mouth breather, I was snoring, and I'd wake up with very, very dry mouth. I'd sort of go to bed with a dry mouth. So what Buteyko recommends is that you try to breathe through your nose and not your mouth, because your nose filters out a lot of the germs and other things that get in your throat when you have your mouth open at night.
Mm, yeah.
So basically what you do, and I know this sounds sort of crass, this is what I did. I'm not going to tell everybody to do this because I'm not responsible for what they do with Wetiko. But I taped my mouth shut. And I thought, well, I'd start out with taking, you know, when I take an afternoon nap, just tape my mouth shut. And then at some time when I go to bed at night, I'll do it for about an hour or so, and I'll take it off. So basically, what I'm doing is laying there on my back or on my side, and the air is coming in through my nose and not my mouth. So I found out that, A, number one, my mouth didn't seem to be as dry. Even though I took it off during the night, my mouth did not seem to be as dry. And when you have a dry mouth and an open mouth when you're breathing through your mouth at night, that's not good for your dental hygiene or your teeth. After a while, your gums begin to fade away and you have gum problems and all kind, well, throat problems and that kind of thing.
Right.
So to me also, I've been told by a doctor that was out in California that young people have more carbon dioxide in their system, in their muscles, than those of us that are older. And so, in my opinion, now this is just my opinion, I believe by breathing through my nose at night, it puts more carbon dioxide in my system.
Oh, interesting.
That's my opinion. But when you have more carbon dioxide in your system, you have more supple muscles and younger, you know, more youthful physique. I'm not going to say anybody's going to look like Superman, but so for those people that are trying to graduate from a walker with nothing and they still maybe are dizzy or foggy-headed, maybe this type of breathing would help them to wake up. And sometime I would wake up having not taped myself and tried to get up to go to the restroom. Sometimes I'd feel so dizzy I thought I was going to fall.
That's interesting. Bill will find that interesting, I'm sure. Wow.
But now since I've been taping my mouth shut, I don't do it all night long because I thought, what if I wake up dead, you know? But
no.
Maybe I wouldn't wake up at all. But the point is, I feel more clear-headed, and I don't feel like sometime when I was standing near my husband, I'd have to hang on to him because I felt like I was going to fall over. That was the earlier stages. But now I don't feel that way. I don't feel so foggy-headed and loopy and dopey and all that kind of thing. So maybe that's what a person needs to feel more confident, walking without a walker or maybe walking with a stick. So I don't know. Just an idea.
What a wonderful suggestion, something that anybody can pursue very easily.
Well, if you're sitting there watching TV and you're not going to be talking to somebody else, just tape up your mouth and use a paper tape that you can get at Walgreens that does not have a strong adhesive on it because you don't want to pull your lips off when you pull the tape off.
Yeah, right, exactly. Good point.
When I went in for that sleep study, they put a piece of tape right where my end of my eyebrow was, back to my head.
Oh.
And when they took it off, I thought it was going to rip my eyeballs out.
Oh, God.
And then they put some gluey stuff all over my, not all over, but in spots on my hair, so I had to go have my hair washed to get the stuff out.
Oh, boy.
So, but what I'm going to do is, I've had a chance of meeting finding out about a dentist who does the apparatus that they put in your mouth, which helps you get rid of the obstructive sleep apnea characteristics. And I, since I've got a mild case of sleep apnea, my sister is not as fortunate. I'm not going to sleep in an apnea, a CPAP. That to me is like, I don't think people can get into a good deep sleep and a good REM sleep by using a CPAP.
Yeah.
But that's my opinion. So I'm going to a dentist this next week who does, he fits you just like you're getting a retainer for your mouth, and he fits it in your mouth, and it helps somehow with a alleviate the problem of not of stopping breathing or that kind of thing. So I can do that in addition to taping my mouth if I want to. But this particular apparatus has some rubber bands on it, which allows me to rubber band my mouth shut. And of course, and all of that makes my husband just real happy for me to have a tape on my mouth.
That's pretty funny.
So when he says goodnight, I say, when he says goodnight, I go, goodnight. So I also have been known to be not a stand-up comedian, but a sit-down comedian. So
a sit-down comedian. That's funny. Oh, that's
so
really
funny. I ask also about varicosity, either spider veins or varicose veins. How does the Beamer affect that?
Oh, that's a good question. So the Beamer basically provides support for two issues. The first is it increases and facilitates the viscosity of the blood. In other words, the slipperiness of the blood. And so what you find is there's some degree of thinness of the blood. So there's a little test that is given for persons who, particularly, for example, who have artificial heart valves. And the concern is that the pounding of the valves will create some clotting. And so what they want is for people to have a more viscous blood, in other words, blood that's thinner rather than thicker. And what they do is they have some certain prescription medicines that are prescribed that thin out the blood. So there are certain foods that thicken the blood, and those typically are foods like spinach and beets that'll thicken the blood. And the issue then with some kind of vein challenges can be that there are just some blockages, some thickening of the blood. And so what would be preferable is that the veins be strengthened through better oxygenation, which is what this electromagnetic field therapy does, the Beamer. And the viscosity is facilitated so that there's not as much clotting of the blood. And the big issue with this particular therapy is that in the circulation in the body is got the veins and the arteries, and so the arteries send the blood to the tissues, and then the veins carry the blood back into the heart and the lungs. But the veins and the arteries actually only comprise, get this, 26% of the circulation in the body. 26%, that's it. 74% of the circulation actually passes through these tiny little capillaries, these little tiny passageways that are far significantly smaller than even the diameter of a hair. So tiny little passageways, and plaque over time and with aging tends to begin to shut down and obstruct the passageway of the blood through those tiny little capillaries. So what this particular therapy does is it literally opens up the flow of the blood through these tiny little passageways, so that the nutrition that your body is receiving through foods and perhaps other supplements is actually getting to the tissues, and the waste products are removed from the cells. So if the blood is not getting to the cells and the tissues, there's no way for the waste products to be removed. One of the reasons people who do detox programs have so much difficulty with getting any good results is that those little capillaries in their bodies are all pretty much obstructed. They're shut down. So there's no way that the toxins can be removed from the cells because there's no exit availability. There's no roadway that allows for the toxins to be removed. So the Beamer is designed to be able to facilitate the passage of oxygen to the cells, nutrients to the cells, and the removal of waste. And then as far as the varicose veins and spider veins are concerned, what there, I think I would suggest, just based on speculation, is that because the flow of the blood through these tiny little capillaries is facilitated, then there's better oxygen that gets to the cells, there's better nutrients that is delivered to the cells, and again, the waste products get to be removed. In terms of varicose and spider veins, it may be that the other huge contributor to healing that, as far as the electromagnetic field therapy is concerned, would be the improvement in the viscosity of the blood. Oh, and I see, Vanna, there's some question that you wrote. You also say, does it treat varicose and spider veins? So the thing I want to be clear about with the Beamer is it's not designed to address any specific disease or symptom or illness. It basically is just this generic ability to help the body heal from the inside out. So in terms of any specific evidence, for example, or research that would indicate that that's what happens, no, I've not seen any specific study that would directly relate to that at all.
Okay. So who was it that you got your financial backing through?
So the magic source that I was told about, and I think they still offer this, is it's called Citibank, C-I-T-I, Bank. And they have a lot of different credit cards that they have. It took me about 10 minutes to find the one that has the deal. It's called Simplicity Card. And the specific arrangement is it's 18 months, a year and a half, of free interest for your charge. So no interest is paid. You do have to pay a monthly payment. I guess the one that I had to pay, I think, was $110, I mean the minimum. But, of course, the idea is that after that each month, if you pay $300, you'll have the whole thing paid off by the time 18 months is up. Now, the downside to that arrangement is if you're not disciplined enough to make your payments every month and you get to the 19th month and they start charging interest, the interest charge is like 25%.
Yeah.
So you want to be sure that you set a program whereby you pay it off, because you don't want to be paying 25% interest on your balance. But in the end, I thought, oh, I can do that. You know, that's doable. So we went ahead and bought it under that arrangement. And it's pretty speedy process. I just called. They ask a few questions, not too many, and then they immediately qualify you, and then they send out the card in the mail. And then that's what I used when I purchased the Beamer, was that number.
Well, I already have an account or two with Citibank.
Oh, well, maybe they'll just set you up with that then easily.
It's early 90s. In fact, I've been collecting frequent flyer points with American ever since 1990. I've collected probably 150 airline trips.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're a steady customer of theirs.
They promoted me from gold frequent flyer to platinum.
Wow.
Over a 20, 30-year period.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? It means I get on after first class. Everybody gets on.
Yeah.
After me.
Right. Well, that's pretty impressive. Well, shoot, you just call them up. They should be able to be happy to sign you up for that kind of arrangement.
They should be in there. The interest rate is low. It's not 25%.
Yeah, I mean, zero for 18 months is a great deal. I figured I can do that.
Yeah. So I think I made all the comments that I was going to make. Anybody
Well,
has any questions about walking without a walker, you know, feel free to call me. I don't know how you do that, but
well, you know, I can. Anybody who wants any other content or information about this, if they can email me, I'll be happy to forward the email to you.
Okay.
If you like, I mean, you can give your email, but usually people don't like to do that. So whatever.
Well,
right,
there's one I have. It's a rogue one. It's called Health Renewal.
Uh-huh.
Health, H-E-A-L-T-H, Health Renewal, @AOL.com.
Oh, cool. There you go. So everybody has it. just contact Vana if you'd like to be able to get some inspiration about how it's possible to move from a walker after having an injury to being able to walk without one.
Yeah. So let me just double check, make sure that's it. I think that's it. I haven't used it in a while. Let's see.
What you can do, Vana, is just type in if it's a different address, and I'll announce that to everybody. And I see there's one more person that's called in, so I want to make sure I can connect to them.
Okay.
So let me go switch to them and say hello, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks so much for being here, Vana, today. So is this Teo?
Yes.
Hi there.
Can you hear
me?
Good
to hear your voice.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Oh, you couldn't hear me before, though, could you?
No, but now you're loud and clear.
Okay. Well, this is kind of a surprise. I didn't figure out how to get onto the system until the end of the lecture there.
Well, everything is on replay, so you can hear. Right. We had a rather fascinating discussion about balance and walking and all sorts of other issues.
Yeah. I'm actually struggling quite a bit nowadays, but I can speak with a lot of confidence on the movement issues. I have tremors all over at this point. I can't write or do anything like that. I am still driving and other things, but it's only because I keep doing it and forcing myself to do it. So the gentleman that was talking earlier about the walker, and you, I think the word you were looking for was trekking poles.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Like you already know, I hiked the Appalachian Trail twice in the last 2 years from Georgia to Maine, 2,200 miles each time. The first time I used trekking poles, I snapped a number of them, but I did the whole trail basically with trekking poles. And the second year, my body just stopped using them. It would be like I'd find myself carrying them, which really surprised me because in some ways my situation had deteriorated a little bit. And I stopped using them, and it really was beneficial and much easier. And I think the reason was because I was standing more erect using my own balance as opposed to depending on the poles. So I like to use trekking poles for just lateral support, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you're using it for lateral support, you're basically standing up straight. You're not like leaning forward into them.
Right.
And I actually gave a talk to like 30-something elderly hikers at one point on the trail, and they were really excited about what I said, and it was basically about how I transferred that meaning into walkers and so forth and so on. It was pretty exciting.
Oh, that is
exciting. Another thing that you touched on in the class today, which I thought was good, when you were talking about one of the remedies or whatever, the thiamine or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I think it was, you also mentioned that I've heard it before, probably in your course or some other lectures, but the stress and the anxiety is like a core thing, and all the therapies in the world aren't going to work if those things are present, you know?
Right.
And I still believe that, and I still have a couple of areas that I need to get cleared up. And so I think sometimes rather than chasing therapies, a few core things like that are key to rectifying first, you know?
Oh, yeah. You know, you're speaking to the choir, Dale.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last thing I wanted to share was on the movement thing. Personally, I've been a mover my whole life. I'm black belt in Shaolin Kempo Karate and pretty experienced in some other areas. I've been a fitness trainer for a number of years. I'm not doing it anymore. I just train myself at this point. But movement just makes me happy, and it also now is kind of what I cling to keep going until I come on some other therapies that will be more effective or help me out here. But I do yoga every day. And it's not always because I want to get up early and go to a yoga class, but I have to say that's really one of the number one things that helps me with balance, movement, posture, and all those other things. It's totally, totally a wonderful, wonderful thing. And there is a lot of differences in yoga classes, so that's up to each person to figure out which kind of class they like. But they're all pretty good. Another thing is breathing. You can go on YouTube and get wonderful instruction on different breath exercises, to help oxygenate your cells, relieve anxiety and stress, and all kinds of lists goes on and on. So I kind of lost my train of thought, but definitely I think, you know, the gentleman was talking about the walker and his adverse thoughts about it. And I think that if you just keep moving, like if you can't go to the gym and figure out what to do on your own, do what I do. I used to teach these classes and now I go to them. You go to group instructed classes. All you have to do is get yourself in the door. There's interval training classes, there's strength training classes, there's yoga classes. And a lot of times I can go to the YMCA and get them all in one. As well as I'm also doing that, what's that Parkinson's boxing class called?
Rock Steady Boxing?
Yeah, I just started one of those a couple weeks ago. And so that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Those are the things that keep you behind the wheel and keep you moving through life, you know?
Yeah.
So I could definitely encourage people to keep moving.
Well, thank you.
I can talk for hours on that subject, so I'll let it go.
Well, thank you for those words of wisdom from somebody who, again, has hiked those incredible trails now a couple of times in the last couple of years. And we have a picture that we posted on the blog of you up at the very summit of one of those mountains. It's just stunning.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, another thing I just did was a Master Fast. There's a thing called the Master Fast program. I just did a 10-day fast about a month or so ago.
Oh.
And that was really a really enlightening thing. I'll probably do some more of those. You spoke a little bit about fasting in the class today. That was good.
Yeah. Well, wonderful.
But thank you for everything.
Oh, you're welcome, Teo. Thank you so much for connecting in as well. And it occurred to me there's one other suggestion for balance that I want to also mention here at the conclusion of our program today. And that is that, surprisingly, some research indicates that vitamin D3 might facilitate better balance. Now, Bill, I know you live on the East Coast, and it's not as problematic as is the case in the Northwest. But you likely already take some vitamin D3. But just so you know, apparently high doses of D3, the research indicates, might also be something that would facilitate better balance as well. I want to check our questions and answers page. Looks like we've addressed the one that came through on that one. And I want to also check our chat room to make sure we've addressed anything that might have been written there. Looks like we have addressed all the concerns that Vana wanted us to discuss. So it's been quite a fascinating discussion, to say the least, today. Thank you, those of you who have called in, to share your experiences, your wisdom, your suggestions. It means such a great deal to everyone who obviously listens in to the replays of our programs. So for those of you who are with us today, thank you so much. And those of you who are going to be listening to the replays, well, thank you so much for being here. We normally, as you well know, have our sessions the last Monday of every month. This Monday was an exception. Tomorrow is Memorial Day, as well as I have to actually be on a plane tomorrow. So we had to convert over to our session to be on Sunday rather than Monday. But next month in June, we will be the last Monday of the month. You'll see a report of that, of course, the link for our support group gathering on our support group page. And again, please, please do visit our member web pages every single day. We update them every day and every week. We have some fascinating kind of experiences for you to be able to have some facilitation of ease and joy on your journey down the road to recovery. And that's what's happening here on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all of the women are smart and all of the men are handsome and all of the children are truly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact that you are on the road to recovery and the fact that you are a part of the Parkinson's Recovery membership, that you indeed are on the road to recovery.